Alan Clarkson Weekly Review, Current Technology Analysis, Show Number 30, April 15th and 16th, 2006, WVTexan.podomatic.com. This week's intro music is available on the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. The artist is Zion I. The track, One Love. In this week's show, we look at the changeable web and XML HTTP request tracing. The buzz is MySpace, a pair of legal cases involving online advertising and trademarks, and for the Because You Can site, Podcasting God. Now on to the show. The changeable web and XML HTTP request tracing. At the heart of many changeable web applications and websites is an extension to JavaScript called XML HTTP request. This feature of Mozilla's Firefox and Microsoft Internet Explorer's ActiveX library allows requests for structured data to be sent asynchronously between a web browser and web server without constantly refreshing the page. It is this element of the so-called AJAX stack or programming model that allows dynamic, rich user interfaces in web-based applications to behave like the interfaces to traditional client-server applications. The functionality is implemented using JavaScript to instantiate a data object populated from a remote data source. We're going to look at two elements of this functionality for the changeable web as regards forensics. The first is the inherent security problems embedded with this functionality. The second is one means for determining the data sent back and forth by these scripts. First, the security aspect of XML HTTP request. JavaScript is only allowed to run within a tightly controlled set of parameters, delineating the source of data that can be requested and the window interface that can be manipulated. One vulnerability in JavaScript that is currently blocked by most major browser default security settings is cross-domain scripting. That means that a script can only request data from the same domain as a web page, from the same domain that the web page originates. So, if you're viewing a page from mydomain.com, JavaScripts on that page can only access other data from mydomain.com. Lowered security settings may allow data to be pulled from the non-originating domain, but that might present a real opportunity for the unsavory set, so it stays blocked. Providers looking to minimize traffic to a specific server, then, are faced with the difficulty: how to provide broad data access from a centralized location. One answer has been to write proxy scripts that redirect all requests on the server side to the actual data provider. Not cool. This solution is only a rough workaround and against the whole security model of blocking potentially malicious scripts. Reliable XML HTTP requests should only gather data from domain-related locations to ensure author authenticity and trust. That said, the potential exists for the XML HTTP requests to be redirected server-side, which may make tracing difficult in some cases. So, what is one to do for forensics? Fortunately, while changeable web applications may be a relatively new construct for interface delivery, the display platform, namely a web browser, is not so new, and there are a wealth of tools for discovering the contents of a web browser's history and cache files. XML HTTP request contents are recorded as URLs in the browser's history and cache, though they will not be available in the history menu item, and the results are recorded in text files in the user's cache. Any web browser forensic tool can be used to analyze the file and read the contents. Why read them, you might ask? Because the contents reveal what information was retrieved in an XML HTTP request and the results, depending on the web application, are time specific. So, for meaningful forensic analysis of the cached files, an investigator will need to be familiar with the web application that created the request. There's a great tool for that purpose, available as a free extension to the Firefox browser. The extension, there's a link in the show notes, is a GreaseMonkey user script that exposes the contents of all XML HTTP requests to the JavaScript console in the browser. so an investigator can analyze the types of requests made by a web application and trace the requests through the application's data cycle. This information can then be compared with the recovered cache contents, and the returned request contents found there can be rendered meaningful. Voila! Forensics 2.0. Part 1, anyway. See the show notes for links to articles discussing the various elements discussed here, including a link to the GreaseMonkey Script developer's blog entry on the topic. The buzz is MySpace. The Exposing Online Predators and Cyberpaths newsfeed notes, when MySpace was launched in 2003, it functioned mostly as a forum for musicians, a speed of light way for bands to spread the word out about their music, for fans, like the new group, Quiet Drive, who has received more than 500,000 downloads on MySpace before even releasing its first single. Well, that's not so anymore. This week, MySpace.com announced the hiring of Himanshu Nigam, formerly of Microsoft Security Outreach and Child Safe Computing, to be its top cop, or chief security officer. MySpace has come under fire lately from privacy groups and child protection organizations for its apparently lax attention to the sharing of personal information by users who may have violated its only over 18 sign-up policy. MySpace is currently the most popular social networking site, website. A friend of mine met his current love interest there, in part because it's so easy, so full of hip people, and relatively open. Those three attributes have combined to make it a natural hangout for teenagers and increasingly preteens. The fact that bands targeting those demographics have sites there doesn't hurt the population either. So, as the adage goes, where the kids go, the predators will follow, and MySpace is increasingly the subject of outraged parents and teen advocacy groups who bemoan the increased loss of security in little Janie and Johnny's lives. A couple of years ago, Friendster.com was the most popular social networking site, but problems similar to the ones MySpace is now facing forced a change in Friendster's acceptable use policy. That change pretty much killed the coolness, and the service was overtaken in popularity. MySpace must now walk a fine line between losing its hip factor by limiting users' freedom to interact and protecting its users from predatory behavior by others. In addition to hiring Mr. Nigam, MySpace will also launch a series of ads targeted at raising awareness of the dangers of online predators. See the show notes for links to several articles discussing the new moves at the company. This week's legal case is Adina Realty v. the MLSonline.com and Merck v. Metaplan et al. A bonus this week, two cases for the time of one. The two cases, Adina Realty v. the MLSonline.com and from the U.S. Federal District of Minnesota, and Merck v. Metaplan from the U.S. Southern District of New York, deal with amazingly similar issues in the use of trademarked names as purchased keywords for sponsored advertising in Internet searches. A quick bit of background. The advertising model of major search engines allows anyone to purchase relevant keywords. That is, the system allows a company to place an advertisement with a search engine company and then pay to have the ad related to a given set of keywords or search terms. So, for example, I could purchase a relationship to the search term technology podcast and have a link to this show prominently displayed in the search results. Such is the circumstance in both of this week's cases. On one crucial point, the two cases differ. In U.S. trademark law, the overarching federal statute is the Lanham Act, which lays out specific tests for trademark infringement. One key element of the tests under the Lanham Act is the use in commerce element, which requires that in order to be infringement, the use of another's trademark must be directly related to sales, advertising, etc., must be outside fair use, such as comparative advertising, and must confuse consumers. The issue of use in commerce as pertains to purchasing AdWords is relatively untested in the federal courts. As an advertising method, sponsored results are relatively new and not universally understood. The Minnesota case, Adina Realty v. the MLSonline.com, relies in part on the 1999 decision in Brookfield Communications v. West Coast Entertainment, which determined that domain names and meta tags in web pages both constitute use in commerce for the purposes of the Federal Trademark Protecting Lanham Act. Building off the previous court's analysis, this district court found in the present case that AdWords, combined with the placement of the plaintiff's mark within the advertisement, constituted clear use in commerce, and that the case should proceed. In the New York case, on the other hand, the court was less convinced, finding that the purchase of AdWords could be construed as fair use under a comparative advertising theory. The New York court held that merely referring to a competitor's mark by purchasing AdWords does not constitute use in commerce. While the two cases are still pending full hearing, both published findings dealt with motions for preliminary judgment. Each will provide valuable guidance for companies looking to navigate the difficult waters of advertising on the internet with targeted search results. Early analysis suggests that simply purchasing AdWords may not be commercial use or use in commerce, but when combined with the ambiguous inclusion of the trademark in site text or description or meta tags, use in commerce may be established. See the show notes for links to both cases and a couple of articles discussing the results. This week's Because You Can is Podcasting God. No, this segment is not about Adam Curry and the Daily Source Code. I'm talking about the actual almighty, all-powerful, omniscient being for the whole universe. For those so inclined, Jesuit Media Initiatives has put together a trial site for the season of Lent, I Pray and Pray As You Go. Both are downloadable, video and audio respectively, daily prayers from a Jesuit priest, complete with chimes and most of the office for the day. There's no telling if the service has been popular enough during Lent to encourage the order to continue the service after Easter, but we'll see. Looking for an online cantor for direction with your nushash? Such a service exists as well, in downloadable MP3s, almost 27 hours of content in over 1,300 individual tracks. And then, to round out the top three, check out the Call to Prayer and Introduction to Prayer from the Islamic Information Center. All three websites are linked in the show notes. Thanks to Brother Jay for the lead. Well, that's all for this week. Check back next week for another review. Remember that all the show notes are available at http://protopage.com/weeklyreview. And if you get a minute, leave a comment on the posting site. It'll be nice to hear from you. Well, we're going out now with Zion I from the PodSafe Music Network with One Love. So hold on to this feeling, 'cause there's a long way to. Oh, oh.